Welcome back to Wings Nuts. This is the often weekly audio program that talks about each and every episode of classic 1990s sitcom Wings. Your face belongs to Noxzema. Emerson, how are we today?
I'm okay. You know what? I got some big news today that I'll save for like a future episode once the news is more public. But yeah, it's a little bit of a bummer, but not too bad. Not too shabs. I work in the movie industry, and so there's a lot of like layoffs happening in that regard. And so my news is related to that.
Well, sorry to hear it.
So it goes. It's not that bad. I'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to work actually in the video game industry, and so layoffs are not an alien concept to me.
You know, I got laid off myself earlier this year, so I know how it feels, you know, and
Can we not talk about you, Jared? No, just kidding. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you know what? I thought about you when I got my news today, and I was like, you know what? He pulled through pretty well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like it's nice to know that like I'm not in a position where I am truly working or like living paycheck to paycheck like I was in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely like get by and coast and it'll be fine.
And then we stare mournfully straight into camera and say, it gets better.
It gets better. But also this is my chance to launch my all spice cookbook. Mm-hmm. You know, no proteins, no fats, no butters, just nothing but spice. It's going to be called Crispy Tongue.
Yeah. You know, we're in like a season of change. I feel like if people wonder why our episodes have been a little bit off schedule, it's because I've been in the process of moving, but that process is almost over, you know, new job and relocating counties and everything. So,
well, you know, I'm an Aquarius and I'm hoping that this is the dawning of the season of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're both Aquarii.
That's right. I forgot about that. So today we're doing season 3, episode 4, titled I Ain't Got No Money.
What?
I Ain't Got No Bunny. Yeah,
okay, thank you.
Which originally aired October 17th, 1991. And I should have like pre-screened these, but let's just grab the IMDb summary. Mm-hmm. Joe and Brian discover that Lowell is sleeping at the airfield. He tells them that he and his wife, Bunny, are on the skids because he thinks that she's throwing herself at other men. They tell him to try and work things out. So he takes his wife out. The next day, he tells them things didn't work out because he assumed she was hitting on a guy. He then asks them if one of them can talk to her. Brian offers to do, but Joe thinks he shouldn't. When he talks, she comes on to him and Joe walks in before anything happens. Oh, that's not true. Mm-hmm. Now they have to tell Lowell that he has to get away from her. Written by rcs0411@yahoo.com.
Yeah. Bunny wanting Brian's Astro there.
Yeah. So if you have any feelings one way or the other about that IMDb summary, please email us at wingsnutsprogram@gmail.com.
No. What? Contact rcs0411@yahoo.
I was going to offer that as the follow-up.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off at the pass if you want to retake it and I could be quiet.
No, at all. I thought I got like our email address wrong. Cool. So,
yeah, this episode, the talent for this one, once again, we had Andy Ackerman directing, and we had a writing team that... kind of familiar with them, Ken Levine and David Isaacs. Mm-hmm. They pretty much have a lot of overlap in their careers. They're a long term writing team. They wrote the film. I know this is one of your favorites, Mannequin 2 On the Move.
Okay.
They wrote on The Jeffersons, MASH, The Tracy Ullman Show, The Simpsons, Cheers, Frasier. So we're talking like a high caliber writing team here.
Holy moly. Yeah, you're right.
Guest stars. I'll get these two out of the way. We had Hare Krishna 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And one of these Hare Krishnas is Peter Trencher. Mm-hmm. He was in Babylon 5, The Greatest American Hero, Moonlighting. And Hubie Haloob was the other Hare Krishna. Hubie Haloob. His name is Hugh B. Haloob.
Was he in Hubie Halloween?
Yes. Hubie Haloob.
That's a great name.
An awesome name. I wonder if he makes a hullabaloo everywhere he goes. But he had a much more extensive resume of, you know, small parts on just a ton of very familiar shows like L.A. Law, Tales from the Crypt, Picket Fences, 90210, Everybody Loves Raymond, Melrose Place, NYPD Blue, My Name is Earl, 2 and a Half Men, Arrested Development, long resume there.
Yeah, great for him.
And then I would say we had our featured guest star, Laura Innes, playing the often spoken of, but until today, unseen Bunny Mather, Lowell's wife.
I thought she was perfect.
Yeah, this, you know, we'll get to it, but her scene was just fantastic, you know?
Like, what casting? What great casting.
It was great. And she has appeared also in a lot of projects like Hey Dude. Bakersfield PD. Party of Five, My So-Called Life, ER, Warehouse 13, among others. Did you used to watch Hey Dude?
No, is that Nickelodeon?
Yeah, it was a Nickelodeon show. It had, I forget her name, but Ben Stiller's future wife was on that show.
I think I previously mentioned that I grew up with like mostly no cable. Intermittently we had cable, but like my mom kind of like put the nicks on it. Didn't it also have like the redhead kid from Terminator 2 in it?
Yes, it did. He was like Budowski or something on that show.
As a redhead, like he was one of the representation that I really liked. I thought he was cool. He was cool. Scott Weiland, even though he was like a fucking heroin douchebag, was also pretty cool. He's like a rock star.
Yeah.
Hey, sorry to break in here. This is Jared with a formal apology. We are talking about the actor Danny Cooksey in this portion of the show. And Danny Cooksey, as you are probably screaming at your podcast radio right now, is actually from the show Salute Your Shorts, not Hey Dude. I can't believe I made the mistake. I don't know how it happened. I sincerely, sincerely apologize to Danny Cooksey and all of our listeners. And going forward, we pledge to do better. And from the bottom of my heart, I'm sorry.
Now get it right or pay the price.
Yeah, and that guy that we're speaking of from Hey Dude and Terminator, he was also in like a metal band too.
Was he really?
Yeah, at the same time in the 90s.
Was it the Chuck E. Cheese band?
No.
Well, because
no.
they're metal robots, but they have like felt covering.
No, I wish I had the, I wasn't prepared with the redhead from Hey Dude's metal band here, but I wish I had it at my fingertips, but I remember my friend had the CD.
Could you imagine like just the level of like, if you had to like have like 6 degrees of topics from every single thing we talk about on this show? I need to know. Also, the bands that he was in. There are 8 additional actors in that show that she was also in, and each of them has different things. That'd be insane.
That's the excellence we strive for, though. And sorry to miss the mark today.
And also every other time that we've missed it.
Yeah.
The previous 31 episodes. Mm-hmm. Well, so our writing team, did they write any previous episodes that we are particularly fond of?
No, this was their first turn at the typewriter for Wings.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Was this, but they had previously done other things for other shows, right?
Yeah. They started with like the Jeffersons era, you know, working together and writing. And I believe Ken Levine has a book on television writing that I think I read like 10 years ago. That's why his name's familiar to me.
When I was younger, I had a book on television, but that was back when CRT TVs had that wide flat top surface. Mm-hmm. So you could stack a bunch of books on there.
Oh, very good.
Now my flat screen TV, I can't balance any books on it.
Yeah.
So I have no more books on TV. Let's go ahead and cut that out of the episode. All right, we're moving on.
Back when televisions looked like furniture rather than the monolith from 2001.
Yes, absolutely. So anything else to add regarding our guest stars or our production staff?
No. I was just wondering if those actors playing the Hare Krishnas like had really good bald caps or if they had to shave their heads for that very minuscule part.
I was trying to figure out if that would be like a PC violation, mm-hmm. or if it's like, you know, in like Roy's kind of voice, so it kind of fits his character. But I found like a YouTube page called Hare Krishnas in Movies, and it like has clips from like every instance of Hare Krishnas, including like this episode of Wings. Like it's got like a different YouTube video for their appearance in the cold open that we'll get to, and also for their credits in the end credits sequence. What? It's really like, it's kind of fun.
What's the take on it? Is it like,
it was very neutral.
Yeah.
There were no comments. I think that like the description of the YouTube video just says like these two actors played these characters, and you know, it didn't have like a take one way or the other. The whole YouTube page is kind of like, it's like we're documenting just instances of Hare Krishnas in like movies and TV. And, this is a nonprofit page for religious purposes.
That kind of seems like it fits for me, because like Hare Krishnas seem very passive and nonviolent. So they don't seem like the type that would call out like when they're being stereotyped and mocked in media. They're just like passively observing it.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Yeah. Like it seems like that's definitely like the move. Like if you want to like, you know, represent your organization well, you want to like kind of show that you are above, you know, like whatever petty criticism and stuff.
Yeah.
So should we get into some news?
Let's news it.
Do, 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 do.
Ba, 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 ba.
All right. So I got one. This is, I'm going to start with the Enquirer and Mirror. And this is on page 4A of the Enquirer Mirror under business briefs. And it says, it's video time. For just about the rest of the month, if it's a movie you crave, you have to head to the video stores instead of the downtown movie theaters. The Dreamland Theater closes for winter after Saturday, according to owner Charles Flanagan. The newly released comedy The Super will be the final show. The Gaslight Theater is closed for the next 3 weeks or so for repairs. The Gaslight will reopen sometime near the beginning of November. And the reason why I pulled this is because it's like insane. When I read this article, I remembered that I actually spent October 1991 in Nantucket.
Yeah.
And like, what? I really like my family knew the owner of the Gaslight Theater, and we like really wanted to watch a movie there. And like, he was like, I'm sorry, it's closed. And I was like, you can't even just open it up for us. And he was like, no. And then recently I brought it up to him, and I was like, you know, like I would like really wanted to see a movie there. And he was like, I never met you before. And I was like, I have a picture of the two of us together. And he was like, no, that's not me. And I was like, this is clearly you. You even signed the back of it. He's like, that's not my signature.
And the theater never closed. It was always open.
I was like, you guys were closed for 3 weeks in October. And he was like, no, we weren't. I've never been closed. And I was like, no, you guys were closed. He's like, no, you're crazy. You're making stuff up. And I was like, I am not making stuff up. And he was like, no, you're totally crazy. And so I don't know. Like, I don't know where the name of the theater comes from, but that was just a weird experience that came to me like when I was reading this article.
So you missed your chance to see a show there. So you had to go to like the Toxic Mask Cineplex.
Well, I ended up going to the Dreamland Theater and I saw The Super.
Nice.
Starring Joe Pesci.
How was it?
It was super.
Cool. I got from the Boston Globe, Bush's veto of jobless bill is sustained. This article is by Michael K. Frisbee. Senate Democrats failed by two votes yesterday to override President Bush's veto of a bill extending unemployment benefits to more than 1 million jobless Americans. skipping ahead, the legislation would have provided up to 20 extra weeks of compensation to people who had exhausted their regular benefits. Thus far, Democrats say about 1.4 million Americans have exhausted their benefits since March 1st. And the article breaks down how the Senate voted. Labor Secretary Lynn Martin said after the vote, "It is time to put differences aside. Those Americans who have used up their benefits need a signed bill." Skipping ahead, Mayor Flynn in Boston, in his capacity as president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, accused senators who voted to uphold Bush's veto yesterday of callously turning their backs on unemployed Americans and their families. Flynn also urged Bush and the Congress to adopt a proposal unveiled recently by big city mayors that is designed to reinvigorate the nation's economy. "On the domestic needs of this country, the administration and their allies continue to be totally lost," Flynn said. "There is no economic recovery game plan forthcoming, and there is no short-term safety net for American families in need." I kind of have a memory of this. There was, like, you know, that Bush era recession where unemployment was kind of historically high.
I have no memory of that. I guess in my little world, all I cared about was like the next poem I was writing in my little poem book or some shit.
I remember this, like the failure to extend unemployment longer during the crisis. It seems like the same song over and over in America. No aid for those in need, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm feeling that currently, so I'm definitely...
Yeah, I know. Like, you know, recently, none of us were surprised. I don't know if you have student loans, but I got a truck full of them. And, you know, I was not really... I can't say I'm surprised, but I was disappointed that... you know, the current administration failed to live up to the promise of a kind of a jubilee for at least $10,000 to $20,000 worth of student loans. So
So I'm a little bit glib when it comes to current news. I find that it's like the best way for me to like maintain my sanity is to kind of just like gloss over a lot of that stuff, which is maybe a bad approach. And I probably should try to like find like a better like way to like be present in the world. But like my understanding of it is that they were able to like take it to court and basically like not go through with like the loan forgiveness because there was a lawsuit from people who don't have student loans saying that they would not receive the same benefits. And so like it's somehow detrimental to them because they're not like in a position to like benefit from this.
It was a lot like many other cases the Supreme Court's taking now where it was kind of a manufactured case. Oftentimes they'll come up with not the Supreme Court, but you know, other lawyers and lobbyists and insiders will come up with a way they want to push the law, and they'll kind of design a case, and then they'll find the plaintiffs and bring them into it. And that was just the case with this. But
Now, what are you telling me, sir? I'm just a simple case designer here. And if I'm trying to, like, prostagonate, I don't know. Sorry. I'll stop talking. Yeah.
But it sucks, you know? So
it really sucks, yeah. I know, like, a lot of people that were, like, really kind of relying on that, especially, like, you know, like through the financial hardships of COVID and everything. This is, it's awful.
Yeah.
I'm back in the Enquirer Mirror. We have news notes. I thought this was a cute little article. The Royal Treatment. Nantucket offers trick-or-treaters some unique challenges at Halloween, and school volunteer Marcia Fader is working to make things easier. Children in outlying areas have to walk miles between houses, she said, only to find many summer homes locked up tight. They might come to town to the old historic district to trick-or-treat, but they may not know which houses are open since people downtown are not their neighbors. They could walk an entire street and not find any house open, said Fader. For the second year, Fader will distribute a flyer to elementary school students listing downtown residents and guest houses that will be welcoming trick-or-treaters Halloween night, October 31st. She invites downtown residents who want to be included to leave their names and addresses on her entry machine at 555-1683 by 555-23. I thought that was just like a cute little thing. I never thought about that too. Like when you're living in a town that has such a fluctuating population, where like a lot of people are probably like back in their like home city during October. You have summer to kind of people. Find ways. Yeah, exactly. The summer people when they're summer houses.
Yeah.
And so I know like a lot of communities actually do trick-or-treating like at the mall and stuff.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah. That's a big thing now.
Did you guys do anything like that for Nico?
Heck no. We just do the very traditional thing of driving to a rich neighborhood and knocking on a couple doors and getting like huge jumbo sized candy bars.
Dude, full candy bars, bro. Yeah, king size, dude, king size.
Yeah, we actually did that. Yeah, and it does work.
That's awesome.
From the Boston Globe, headline, gunman slays 22 in Texas. Subheadline, then kills self after attack on restaurant. This article is by Scott Rothschild. A man smashed a pickup truck through a restaurant window yesterday and fired on the lunchtime crowd with a high-powered pistol, killing 22 people in the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history, authorities said.
The gunman, I bet that'd be like the sixth biggest now.
Yes, yes. I actually looked it up and you're right, Emerson. I don't know how you had that fact at hand, but it is the sixth largest mass shooting.
You guys, to be fair, I told Jerry I was gonna snipe it before.
Could you guess what the first one was?
Oh, I don't know. Is it the one in Vegas?
Yep, the Stephen Paddock one in Vegas. But
at the country festival?
Yeah, wait a minute. How do you know so much about that? Isn't what happened in Vegas supposed to stay in Vegas? I mean, it's kind of fucked up. Like, who told?
Oh, Jesus.
You know what I mean? No, but yeah, that's number one. Pulse nightclub's number two. Virginia Tech is number three. Sandy Hook is number four. Sutherland Springs, the First Baptist Church, is number five. Coming in at number six is the very one we're talking about today.
Can you deliver that line again with more of like a Casey Kasem? Coming in at number six, we got the sorry, that's so awful. I mean, time like, yeah, the passage of time like allows us to kind of crack jokes about probably truly horrible instances. I'm sorry. I apologize to everybody.
It is just pretty fucked to think about, though, that like five of the worst mass shootings in U.S. history took place after the year 2000.
Oh, shit. Wow. That is wild.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say after 1991, but yeah, after 2000.
Yeah. After 1991, all the rest are in the year 2000s.
Coming in at number nine, we have Columbine. That was like, you know, Columbine was like the most shocking for some reason. I feel like just watching it like live on TV and just the way that the news coverage covered it, it just felt so extra disturbing. And that really like, I feel like that kind of, so gross.
Yeah, it was really sensationalized. I feel like because it kind of fit in the kind of culture narratives of the time, you know, it was like a late sort of satanic panic kind of vibe to it.
And plus like all the news, like live news feeds were kept on playing that Limp Bizkit song. It's just one of those days. One of those, he said, she said, and leave space to cut and edit. I don't know. I'm sorry. I hope this isn't like too insensitive. Good gosh.
I think we have enough historical distance. We can laugh. Yeah. But this guy, when he shot up the restaurant, when he ran in, he said, "This is what Bell County has done to me." Whatever that means. And then he started firing.
Wow.
Yeah. And the most messed up thing I read in this whole article is apparently a bunch of the people in there were workers who had taken their boss there for National Bosses Day. Jesus. So just like imagine you're forced to like suck up to your boss and take him pay for his lunch on Bosses Day, and then you get shot. That's like the worst day ever.
Dude, that's so gross. That's really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So back to the Enquirer mirror. We have Bass-O-Matics, the striped bass addiction. This article just kind of made me laugh.
No.
by David Goodman, contributing writer.
Yes, fish eaters, the days of troublesome scaling, cutting, and gutting are over. Because Super Bass-O-Matic 76 is the tool that lets you use the whole bass with no fish waste without scaling, cutting, or gutting.
You have probably observed them around town. Zombie-like with bloodshot eyes and half a week's beard growth. They are the hardcore bassaholics. As with any of the other familiar mind-altering substances, too much striper fishing never seems enough. When the fever comes upon us, all reality is tossed out the window. Work and other relationships are second place, and sleep is rationed, to be gained when the tides and wind are less favorable. This is a limited season, and while the fish are here, we must give chase. In my case, even though I fish year-round, these fall weeks are what carry me through the winter until the bass again visit our shores in spring. There are certain friendships and bonds that arise between the island fishermen and those who travel here from near and far. Certain names and anecdotes are easily recalled and repeated endlessly from angler to angler. Right about now is what I call Old Home Week, when everybody shows up for the line siders. Names like Choppy, Moser, Sheffer, Boylod, and numerous others who are almost as well known as their on-island counterparts roam the salt chuck like spirits in the night searching for that elusive fountain of bass or the monumental Bosco. Just like Ponce de Leon, we will never find the fountain, but we'll go to our graves searching. It is this quest that sustains and nurtures us. If we found endless stripers in a feeding frenzy, the thrill would be short-lived and eventually boring. There are occasions where many fish are easily caught, but these are the exceptions to the rule, albeit welcome exceptions. Anyway, it almost reminded me of like a Dave Barry column.
Yeah, it brought to mind the Dan Aykroyd SNL sketch with the Bass-O-Matic.
Oh my God, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, yes. He puts the fish in a blender.
Oh my God.
That's Bass-O-Matic.
He probably like really put a fish in a blender, didn't he?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Oh my God. But yeah, that's fun. Like, I don't know. I've actually been like trying to like nudge one of my friends into like going fishing with me. I think I like fishing. It's like a nice little pastime. Even if I'm not like trying to like catch dinner, it's just like a nice way to like spend the afternoon if you're like, you know, you got that line dangling in the water, waiting for something to bite.
Mm-hmm.
Sipping on a beer,
mm-hmm.
You know, letting that heroin course through your veins.
Mm-hmm.
Ever tell you about the first time I met Bunny? She was standing right down there at the end of that pier. Sun on her face, wind in her hair. She was gutting a sea bass.
Well, I hate to do this to you, but we have more Clarence Thomas. Woo! And I actually pulled a little bit from the Boston Globe and a little bit about from the Enquirer and Mirror. Mm-hmm. Headline in the Boston Globe, after Thomas, discontent on all sides. And we have a kind of a couplet of articles here. The first one says, inquiries about sex harassment soar. And the other one is party backers, women, rip Democrats. So that article pretty much alludes to how some Democrats voted to confirm Clarence Thomas, which pissed off a lot of their base.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Nantucket Enquirer Mirror kind of picks up on that other thread with the headline, Thomas Confirmation Hearings Open Office Doors on Sexual Harassment by Hobson Woodward. Here's a quote from Brayton, who said that the Thomas hearings have lit up the phones with calls from people wanting information. Without exaggeration, it's been a tiny avalanche, she said, but it's all right because people are being educated.
Wait, with that exaggeration, it's been a tiny avalanche.
Without exaggeration, it's been a, meaning like the feedback coming in.
Right, but I love that he qualified it as a tiny avalanche. With that exaggeration, I am a tiny giant.
This, what this article and the one in the Boston Globe's alluding to is that, like, you know, the Thomas hearings were said to kind of open the cultural conversation about sexual harassment in the workplace. And I remember this moment as kind of being a, kind of another kind of wave of feminism, where it's like somewhat like the Me Too and the present era when, people were, the cultural conversation was happening around like workplace sexual harassment and like parody and employment and stuff. I don't know if you remember that era back then, but
I do remember like a lot of conversation about it. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I'm happy that we've hit a really great, like Me Too. I'm really stoked on. We've hit a point where it's like, people are actually being, called out for their fucking bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and I also like remember from this era, it was so like, I feel like history just always echoes itself because you also had like the reactionary people who were like, gosh, you can't even make a joke in the workplace anymore, you know?
Right. I found like a kind of a dark one.
Ooh, let's get dark.
All right, so this is in the Boston Globe. Praising the Cardinal's virtues. Cardinal Bernard Law, Archbishop of Boston, will be honored as Man of the Year at the 25th annual Don Orione Home and Shrine Banchetto Saturday at the recently dedicated Madonna Queen Function Hall in East Boston. Named Cardinal by Pope John Paul II in 1985, Cardinal Law has continued as a member of such committees as the Vatican Congregation for the Evangelizations of People, Vatican Congregation for Religion and Secular Institutes, and Pontifical Council for the Pastoral Care of Migrants and Itinerant People. And do you know who this is?
Who is this?
He's the subject of that movie Spotlight.
Oh, okay.
He's like the Boston Cardinal that basically like covered up just like I think hundreds of instances of just child abuse in the Catholic Church.
Yep. Yeah. And he's come up on this podcast before too.
I think he has.
Yeah.
Man of the Year.
Wow.
And I'm sure it's so insane because 1991, I'm sure, is like right at the heart of it. He probably covered up like 100 fucking poor kids, you know, just in that year alone. This evil man.
Yeah. So fucked up.
Trying to like protect what he thinks is like some, you know what? I don't even believe that he thinks that. I think that it's like some religious people realize that they can use like the idea that like they can use like basically the beliefs that other people have as like a way to control them. And I think that like he's one of those evil pieces of shit. So fuck you, Cardinal Law. Mm-hmm. I hope that you are in hell now, which I also don't believe in. So you're probably just, you know, worms are probably eating your face. So,
well, yeah, dark that was.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is from the Inquirer and Mirror. Marine superintendent shuts down airport pipeline, written by Hobson Woodward. The Marine superintendent has ordered the airport's fuel pipeline shut down, saying the danger to the harbor is too great to continuing using it without proper oil spill cleaning up equipment. So we talked about this pipeline previously, and it's been shut down.
Yes.
And airport manager Fred Yeager said the $2,500 pump has been on order for months and that he has assurances from the Illinois manufacturer that it'll arrive by Monday at the latest. This thing has to be custom made and they've been dilly-dallying along, said Yeager. The closing will have no real effect because the pipeline should be open again before the next fuel delivery is due, said Yeager. This is not a big deal, he said. It's just Dave Franzuto doing what he has to do, putting pressure on us to do what we promised to do. Yeah. So I wanted to get to touch base on that pipeline.
Yeah. You know, did you see the article also on page 5A of the Inquirer Mirror that talks about like a temporary quarters will house 8 airlines? And so I feel like 8 airlines will move into temporary quarters between December and June while a major renovation project transforms the airport.
Yeah.
So wow. I wonder if that's related.
Yeah, could be.
So I have Lennon's Laundry. Tony Monero, a Brooklyn singer-dancer who says he inspired the story of his namesake in the hit movie Saturday Night Fever, told the New York Daily News that he had a PG-rated sexual encounter with John Lennon. A longtime bit player in Lennon lore, Monero also says Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, and her aides pressured him to lie about the encounter after biographer Albert Goldman suggested in 1983 that Lennon was bisexual. Elliot Mintz, spokesman for Ono, declined comment, but he made it clear he believes neither claim. If John Lennon were alive today, he would have scratched his head at this Alice in Wonderland atmosphere, Mintz said. There seems to be no end to people's fantasies. Even double fantasies.
It did not say that.
No, I added that at the end.
What do you think about that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
If it's true, who cares? It's cool. I'm sure Lennon, you know.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised. Like, he had a very kind of close relationship with Stu Sutcliffe that, like, some have implied was kind of like an infatuation with each other. And I know with their manager, Brian Epstein, I think he had to apologize for him for, like, previously homophobic remarks to him and stuff. And they had kind of tense relationship with one another sometimes.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, if he did, who cares?
Yeah, like, who cares?
It really doesn't affect, like, the like, rotation of the Earth in any way.
It's yeah.
Just, we'll keep exactly. on keeping on.
Exactly. I just have this one from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Alcoholism on island above national and state levels.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Nantucket, home of miles of sandy beaches, a historic downtown, historic downtown, blue skies, and more than 1,000 alcoholics.
Are you okay, Max Hedberg? Welcome to Nantucket.
We touched about on this before, like, people kind of trapped on a surrounded by ocean, turn into substances. Yeah,
I like the quote that said that. That, like, an alcoholic's drinking will affect 5 people.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. It's the, you know, the photograph on the front page.
Yes.
Of, like, a guy holding a glass next to, like, a bottle. Yeah, Joe, leave the bottle. Counselors say an alcoholic's problems touch at least 5 other people, which is kind of a vague statement. I don't know what that really means. Yeah, it's
like, it touched me because I just think he's funny and a cut up and great to be around when he's drunk.
Yeah.
You know, that's touching me.
Yeah. Touch me how.
Number one movie of this date, October 17th, 1991, Other People's Money. Number one song.
I don't know
song.
If I know that one.
I think
have you seen that?
I think I've seen it like a long time ago. I think it had Michael Caine, I believe, was in it. I'm not sure. Number one song was "Ooh, You Got Me Feeling Emotions" by Mariah Carey.
Okay, so should we get another cold open?
Let's do it.
So we start off with a little bit of a PC violation, maybe? I don't know. Roy has no patience for these Hare Krishnas. Couple of Hare Krishnas enter the airport. Like, you know, they obviously, like, departed from probably one of Roy's flights as well, I'm guessing. And Roy immediately, like, runs up to them. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait just a minute. We don't need anyone around here chanting and hitting people up for money. Now get out of here before I call the police and have you dragged away by those little tufts at the back of your head. Just so like finding every possible way to like call out their appearance and stuff.
Be religiously insensitive. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have the most just like California dude, Hare Krishnas, being like, we're just coming off the plane. We take vacations too, you know?
Yes.
And yeah, I tried to like find a take and see if any Hare Krishnas found this offensive or not. And I couldn't really find. I also didn't realize that Hare Krishnas are like a New York City based religion.
Really?
They're kind of like a post-Scientology.
Yeah.
Sect.
So, well, speaking of John Lennon, they were like followers of the Maharishi, weren't they? Or George, like somewhat associated?
Yeah, George Harrison for sure. Like if you watch that the Get Back documentary, George Harrison brings them into the session.
Yeah, yeah. Just a Hare Krishna sitting in the corner.
Yeah. Yes. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
And then the last line of the cold open. And don't forget the sunscreen. He does look a little because of the bald heads.
Was this a PC violation? I don't know, but I did love Roy's turn on a dime, you know, from being like hostile to being like jovial with them.
Potential customers. Oh,
yes.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they probably, all odds are, they came right off of his plane too. So you can't harangue a couple of loyal Aeromask customers.
There's a Simpsons episode where Homer like accompanies Apu back to India to like find the Quickie Mart guru.
Yes.
But
yes.
when they get off the plane, they're like in like an Indian airport, and there are Christians like, you know, like waving a Bible around and trying to like harass people, and a couple of Hare Krishnas are getting off the plane with Homer and Apu, and they go, "Oh, great. Christians." I thought that was a great take.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you rate this cold open?
I'm going, and like not because of like any like, I'm gonna go like 2.5. It just to me was very average. I thought it was like, I don't think it did any like anything special for me.
Yeah. Yeah, me neither. I'll say 2.
Yeah. It's just like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that your health food friend made.
Yes, yes.
You know, nothing like magical about it.
Regarding this episode, what would you say the A, B, C, and D stories are?
Oh, yeah, good point. So the A story, I feel like, is Lowell dealing with like a failing marriage.
I think that's a great way of putting it. Lowell and Bunny's relationship kind of coming to a head.
Right.
Is Lowell jealous is his jealousy's founded? And it's kind of like what happens when Lowell has to confront Bunny's meanderings with other men.
Right. Like, is Lowell
cocked?
I was saying, is he like seeing a movie at the Gaslight Theater? Or is he is he in Dreamland? Yes. Is he singing at Dreamland Theater, or is he actually like not seeing a movie at all and instead seeing reality?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think we know the answer to that. And I believe this is like the first kind of Lowell centered episode where the action, the plot centers around Lowell.
Yeah. The B story, I think, has got to be the Clam Chowder.
Yep.
Tournament.
I agree. And then I noted that the C story is Antonio going to the hospital several times.
Right. Yes. The rule of twos. That's what this episode is.
Mm-hmm.
They should call it the rule of twos.
Yeah, we got two beats of the Antonio story and two beats of the Clam Chowder story.
Yeah. Yes. And then like an unsatisfying. They didn't close that loop. Yeah. So we start off the first scene where Antonio is like sitting at the counter eating a bowl of clam chowder, and he's just like just raving about how delicious it is. And is it Helen's soup?
Yes.
She's saying that she like got special quahogs.
Yes.
And Antonio goes, "Quahogs? I haven't heard that word since the last time I hung out with Peter Griffin."
But for a man that is Italian one and used to work in a restaurant too. He Antonio's terrible at identifying food with his eyes.
Yes.
And also his mouth.
And for a man who is like deathly allergic to a thing, he is like so gung-ho about eating things without knowing what they are. Like mm-hmm. if there was any food in the world that would make my throat close up, I would be like, every single thing I put in my mouth, I'd be like, what's in that? What is that?
Yes. Yeah. And especially if you live like in a seafaring town, you know.
But I love this scene. I really love this scene.
Yes. Yeah.
He goes, oh, quahog. What is a quahog? And is it fish? She's like, oh, quahog. It's the local name for clams.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And then here we go. Oh, no. Oh, this is no good.
Giggity.
Yeah. I am allergic to the clam. And then, yeah, I love this scene when he's like, when I eat them, my throat begins to constrict. My tongue swells. Oh, we're not just medical help. He's like,
mm-hmm.
And then he's like, where are you going? To the hospital. And then like Roy comes in. And then he goes, how are you today? Like, because his tongue is so swollen. And yeah, the other possible PC violation, but I fucking loved it.
Where are you going?
To the hospital. Hi, Roy. How are you?
I can never understand a word that spaghetti head is saying.
Roy is very, very funny in this episode.
Yeah.
He comes in and he announces that he's the next winner of the Nantucket Clam Chowder Cook-Off. And when Faye and Helen are like, well, what makes you think you have a prayer? He goes like, maybe it's the fact that before Martha Blankenship moved her saggy butt to Delaware, she sold me her prize-winning recipe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I love, first of all, saggy butt. It's so funny. And yeah, they're like, you know, that's not fair. Ah, fair is for losers. I'm looking at a couple of big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we've established the first, or what is it, the B line? The B story? We've seen the C story. We've seen Antonio rush out to the hospital. We've seen the B story where Roy introduces the idea of the Clam Chowder Festival. And then we jump to the A story into the hangar where Brian enters the hangar.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe's like, I just heard something. And he's like, he hears the sound of snoring.
Yes.
From his airplane.
And what do they find? What do they find in the plane?
So this is like, this season three is racy.
It is.
We find Lowell sleeping naked in the plane, and we see the whole dick, all of it.
Yeah, all of his dick.
Oh, the whole dick.
And his nips.
His nips. Yeah. No joke.
We see it all.
Or go broke yourself. Oh, the whole thing. Also, I mean, if anybody didn't read our like episode description from a few episodes ago, we like did all those really bad Alan Arkin impersonations.
Alan Arkin, yeah.
Before he passed, and we didn't realize, and like we both love him. He's like a legend. And so I really hope that we didn't say anything offensive.
He was probably laying in hospice as we were sitting here mocking him.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
I still think that Jared does a really great Alan Arkin impersonation.
Hey, thanks for that.
How much of his dick did you see?
I saw the whole dick.
How many nipples?
I gotta say, he had two nipples.
Oh, great.
The areolas didn't disappoint. The diameter of these areolas was perfect.
A couple of quarters?
No, these are silver dollars, baby.
Okay, all right. So yeah, basically like Lowell reveals that he's been sleeping in the plane because his wife, Bunny, kicked him out of the house due to Lowell's jealousy. And Lowell just keeps on suspecting that his wife, Bunny, is like, what, hitting on other men?
Yeah.
How does he put it? Yeah.
He called her unsatiable. Is that right?
No, he says the U word.
The U word.
And Brian goes, unfaithful? No, unsatiable. Uh-huh. And Brian goes, that's insatiable. That's the I word. And Lo goes, no, the I word is indiscreet, which I thought was a really fun run.
Yep.
Oh, I also forgot, maybe maybe my favorite exchange in the whole episode. Ooh, God damn it. Oh my God. It's back to the clam cheddar recipe. And Roy's telling Helen and Faye, because you see, the secret is the clams. Martha told me exactly what to do. I raked them up from a special cove where they feed on dark green kelp and nutrient-rich microorganisms. And Faye goes, this cove wouldn't be the area around your shower, would it? And Faye and Helen laugh, and Roy goes, oh, sure, laugh now. But when the winner's announced and they hoist me up on their shoulders, we'll see who's laughing then. And Faye goes, throw in some shade. It sure won't be those people carrying him.
I know.
I loved that delivery. That line, that was maybe my favorite line of the whole episode.
Yeah, and I like how Faye and Helen kind of, as I recall, kind of conspiratorially cracked wise to each other.
Yes, yeah, it was really fun. It's like fun seeing their camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
Like Faye's like, oh, Helen, when you were in New York, I didn't have another girlfriend to get naked with and shower together. Helen, oh, I need someone to get naked with me. So anyway, Brian tries to kind of volunteer to like talk to Bunny and sort of intervene. And Joe keeps on sort of like warning him, like, don't get involved, you know. And I think that's, I understand that advice, you know, in terms of like of romance, sometimes it can be like dangerous territory, because if you like express an opinion that maybe is accurate, but like, you know, you're like, oh man, she is kind of like cold, whatever. And then they get back together. That could put like a big rift between the two of you. I don't know. There's like,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. There's dangers to it, but there's also like, it seems like Brian genuinely like wants to kind of help.
We need to mention Lowell's fantastic line in this.
I'll feed you the intro.
Yeah.
Come on, Lowell. You know that Bunny is a good wife. She takes care of the kids. She takes care of you.
She takes care of the boys of Operation Desert Storm.
Oh, so good.
Lowell really displays his ability to like change gears quickly in this, to go from like just totally zen to being enraged. And I love it.
I mean, honestly, the fucking dude's probably sick and tired of seeing movies at the Gaslight Theater. He probably like wants to go back to like his ideal days at Dreamland Theater, because like truly, you know what I mean? Like the poor guy, as we find out later in the episode, he is being, I guess, cucked.
Yeah.
If we want to like use a Trump era MAGA phrase.
We do as much as often as we can.
Crooked Hillary.
Yeah. lock her up, folks. Interestingly, we never get to see Bunny and Lowell like share lines together or share the scene together, but you know, we've oft heard of Lowell's wife, and the actor they chose to play her was just perfect. And like, even though we don't see them together, you could kind of see her and Lowell together, which I liked. You know, obviously she has like some sort of sex addiction, but by the same time, I could see how Lowell or many different men could get kind of enamored with her, you know?
Yeah, she's very cute, and she's kooky and fun.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a Joan Cusack type.
Oh, good point.
Mm-hmm. I love Joan Cusack so much.
Really?
Yeah. I'm in love with Joan Cusack.
Oh, okay.
So,
why don't you marry her?
Because she's already married to Phil Donahue.
Really?
Wow. I don't know who she's married to.
Good for her. That's quite a gift.
Ooh, so we have like a fun second scene.
Before we leave this scene, I got to point out, when this scene opened, Brian walked in and said to Joe, you know what I was thinking, Joe? You know what I was thinking? And then Joe goes, wait, Brian, no, wait, do you hear that sound? Wait, Joe, you know what else? Brian says it twice. You know what I was thinking, Joe? We never found out what Brian was thinking.
Oh my God, so many loose ends in this episode.
Yeah, yet another loose end.
Jesus Christ. Well, yeah, what do you think he was thinking?
I think he was thinking of maybe something clam chowder related. Like maybe he was saying, hey, maybe we should get on the in on the this clam chowder. We should do like a Sandpiper Air clam chowder entry or something.
He might have been thinking, like, because I know that like when you install like a new exhaust on your airplane, mm-hmm. you want to like really smooth that thing out. And so he might have had like an idea about being the pipe sander for Sandpiper Air. I don't know if that's true or not, but that might have been what I was thinking.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So we jump to the next episode, scene?
Next episode. Oh, great. Yeah. Let's do it.
All right, so next episode, Helen is an alien, and mm-hmm. okay. So next scene, Roy comes in showing off his clown chatter, but Helen and Faye are not having it.
Nope.
And they reveal that they trailed him the night before.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent that gets a little bit creepy.
Yes.
But also had some of my favorite fucking moments.
To the video store where they saw him go behind the green door and
when he lip syncs the title, that was like one of my favorite moments of the whole episode.
The horror on his face as he's realizing he's been caught.
Robin Hood and his merry women.
Yeah.
There's something called Robin Hood and his merry women. Yeah, because like when she says 7:44 p.m. arrived home, showered, danced by herself in front of the mirror for a good 15 minutes. That was like, all right, you shouldn't be able to see that.
No, that means they are like looking through his blinds and shit. That's creepy.
Yeah. Yes. Or maybe that's how Roy lives.
With all his windows way open.
Yeah. He just like lives like, you know, he's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll throw the first stone.
Yeah.
In my glass house.
Mm-hmm. Shirt off.
And then they reveal, they follow him to a grocery store. And he bought a dozen cans of Old Seabrook clam chowder.
There is no secret clam bed.
We took the liberty of following you last night after you left, Faye.
Yes, 6:32 p.m. Stopped off at the video store, went straight to the adult section. Rented something called Robin Hood and His Merry Women. 7:44 p.m. arrived home, showered, danced by yourself in front of the mirror for a good 15 minutes. 8:31 p.m. walked into the supermarket wearing sunglasses, approached aisle 7, and picked out a dozen cans of Old Seabrook clam chowder.
Store-bought soup, Roy. How could you?
Yeah, and here's Roy. Oh, I don't know what to say. I can't even look you in the eye.
Yes. You can say you're going to withdraw from the contest. Okay. And here's the thing. You know, I can't even look you in the eye. Oh, yeah. This is actually a pretty fun moment. Roy goes, I can't even look you in the eye. And he's like just like staring down in shame. And Helen goes, we'll try, Roy, because right now you're looking at my breasts.
And then he smirks.
Yes, his face is so funny. The way he like looks up, looks down, looks up, looks down, and kind of just like giggles to himself. Oh, it was so funny.
A kid caught with his hand in the cookie jar.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, listeners. They don't follow up. We never find out what happens with the Clown Chatter Festival. Mm-hmm. Ugh, it drove me nuts.
It did. And they could have so neatly had a third beat in there that gave some conclusion to this story arc and also Antonio's medical emergency story arc as well.
Oh my God. Yes. Antonio is at the clam chowder tournament and he somehow eats clams again, and we find out who won the tournament. Somehow Roy still won it, you know, like, yeah. Oh,
Antonio's the judge for some reason,
or Saggy Butt came back and just and somehow like won it, like even though she lives in Delaware.
Yeah,
God, they could have done so much. Fuck.
Yep. Yeah.
That is frustrating.
Yeah.
So Lowell comes in, reveals that his dinner with Bunny went bad. He immediately was accusing her of flirting with the waiter. They go, like, she ran out of the restaurant, basically. He accused her of flirting with the waiter. She ran out of the waitress. She ran out of the restaurant. And then Brian, I think, says, did you go after her? And he goes, well, I tried. But after I got through tipping the sommelier, the maitre d', and the guy I thought was the parking valet, still some questions in my mind about that one. Mm-hmm. She'd gotten home and weighed anchor. Which, by the way, the IMDb trivia, Lowell mispronounces the word sommelier. He says sommelier.
Small sommelier. Isn't it sommelier? Somalian?
I feel like I've been saying it wrong as well.
Well, if you don't say that word wrong, you're not saying it right.
By the way, these summer nights are making a lot of sweat around my headphones.
You summer people? Are you a summer people?
Sometimes, yeah. I'm not. I think that Laura reveals that didn't work out, and then he accused her of flirting with the waiter, and she stormed out. And then Lowell asks Brian to talk to Bunny, and Brian agrees again against Joe's advice. Joe keeps being like, "Don't get involved," you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so we jump to the next episode. Or do you have any more thoughts on this one?
No. Yeah, we're into the next scene. Brian does agree to get involved, by the way, with and talk to Bunny.
Yeah. And so we meet Bunny.
Yeah. Yes. And this is a very, what's the dude's name? Chris Hansen. This scene gave me To Catch a Predator vibes.
Oh, did it really?
Well, because Bunny comes in. He's like, sit down. Would you like some iced tea?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or Brian in the other room. Come on in. Just make yourself comfortable. Pour a glass of iced tea.
I like your version of Wings where it's like Alan Arkin is Brian. And then it's, I don't know, Betty Boop.
Well, you know, To Catch a Predator, it was always like, come on in, have some iced tea. And Brian...
Hey, come in. How's my iced tea? What are you doing?
Come on in.
Yeah, I'm just here to get some iced tea. What are you doing?
I mean, Bunny in her own way is kind of a predator. And, you know.
She is. Yes.
Brian invites her in with some cool iced tea.
Yeah. And so, she's cute. And she's immediately flirting. Also, Brian tells her she's wearing a nice dress, which I was like, you don't need to say that. That was a little bit, I mean, I know he wasn't doing it to like flirt, I don't think, but like, you know, knowing what happens next, it feels like, you're just kind of planting a little seed.
Uh-huh. But respect, he did like show restraint and he did not open himself up to her advancements, which I thought was good on Brian.
Yeah. But I thought she was really fun in this, just like talking about how hot it is. And Brian's like, I wouldn't think you'd get hot wearing that dress. And she pulls an ice cube out of her iced tea and she sucks the iced tea off the ice cube and then starts kind of painting her chest with the ice cube.
God, yeah.
And she pulls her dress down and you see her boobs, both of them. Both of them,
yeah.
Hey, I saw them both boobs. Yeah, when she pulled up both boobs, Brian's dick came out. You see the whole thing? Purple head. Purple speckled head. You can see the STDs. So many STDs.
I love how this is one woman that can make Brian nervous too. Cause like when she talks about how she loves feeling the sun on her shoulders, he goes, oh, me too. Yeah. But I couldn't show up to work wearing just a tie.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
I think it'd be rather easy to stay cool in that dress.
I don't wear it to stay cool. I just love the feel of the hot sun on my bare shoulders.
Yeah, yeah. So do I. But then couldn't show up to work wearing just a tie, could I?
I feel like this is Brian. You know what I mean? Because it's like Brian... I feel like he's nervous because of Bunny,
mm-hmm.
but he's also nervous because of himself. And so he's like fighting his better. He's fighting his like regular, his natural nature.
Yes. Yeah.
He like knows that like if he fall, if he's going to play the Brian in these instances, he's going to like make things like, you know what I mean?
He had to turn off his charm, which like is not, which is a foreign thing to him.
Yeah. Like I think he wants to fuck Bunny, mm-hmm. but he knows that if he does that, then it's going to really, really, really make things bad for him at the airport. And so he knows like, he knows the right thing to do in this instant. And he also doesn't want to hurt his friend. I feel like he doesn't want to hurt Lowell's feelings.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Although as we see where the scene goes, I have like some thoughts about like where the scene ends. Because okay. basically Bunny keeps coming on harder and harder, and eventually she grabs Brian and pulls him onto the desk, and they're making out. Mm-hmm. When Joe comes in, Joe catches the two of them making out, and Joe goes, "Oh, sorry," leaves, and then he comes back at a moment later. Says, "Oh, Brian."
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a really fun moment.
And I loved learning about Bunny's fantasy.
You know, I've always had this fantasy.
What? Pilots?
No, but that's a good one.
Brothers?
Well, sure, brothers. But that's not it either. Co-workers.
Co-workers?
Yeah, I've always wanted to make it with a couple of co-workers.
She's basically suggesting a three-way with the two Hackett brothers.
Yeah.
And they're both just like, no, but Brian does the like...
Yeah, yes, Brian goes, that's just not going to happen. But then he looks at Joe, is it?
Yes. That was like, uh-oh, that might have been my actual biggest PC violation. I was like, oh, are you really like okay with the idea of like, I don't know, Chinese finger trapping like mm-hmm. some woman with your brother? I don't know. That to me, that's just so weird.
Well, Lowell called that relationship dynamic, was it? Yes. Like way back in season one.
Oh my God, Jared.
Imagine if Bunny was the one to make that sort of prophetic insight come true.
Oh my God. Yeah. I wrote fourth scene. Bunny suggests a three-way with Brian and Joe. Is this the closest we'll ever get to Joe and Brian going at it together? Also, yo, super gross. The fact that Brian does the, is it Joe? Sort of floating the idea. Not good. Weird. We learn that Joe has a series of speeches. Oh, I thought that was really fun. So once Bunny does the boom, bop, ba boom, and like leaves. Like Brian, I think Joe goes speech three, and then like, so apparently like Joe has all these speeches, and then mm-hmm. Brian's got them memorized. Yeah. That was like a really fun thing to learn.
Yeah, my favorite is speech three though. The Barry Manilow one.
Oh yeah. Do you agree?
No. Okay. Every Barry Manilow song is different. If you can't tell them apart, you just aren't listening close enough.
Oh man.
I would have liked to seen it. Like I feel like if it wasn't for Lowell and this was just a woman they met at the club car, I think they would have gone for it.
Okay. So basically Joe tells Brian, like, you gotta tell Lowell. Mm-hmm. You know, and so Brian tries to pass it back to Joe, but like finally Joe's like, no, you gotta do it. And so Joe goes out and he finds Brian, and this is a pretty fun moment too. And like,
unfortunately Brian didn't give himself a once over in the mirror before he went to talk to Lowell.
Yeah, he probably gave himself a once over in the bathroom though, because he was all, you know, heated up from his interaction with Bunny. He had blue balls. He had blue balls, so he gave himself a once over.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know. That's we can cut so much of this. Oh wow, this episode is so cuttable. Dibley, your cut. Hodgden, your cut. Brian, your cut. Lowell, your cut. Faye, cut. Okay.
Hey, I'm not so, cut.
Arkin, you're in.
Totally
you're,
natural here.
You're fucking in. Okay. So basically, like, yeah. Brian goes out and he's trying to tell Lowell that like his suspicions were correct and that like Bunny is hitting another man. And before he can say anything, Lol keeps on being like, oh, wow, you have lipstick on your collar. Oh, you fly boys. You never get whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And just like kind of calling out all the things that are like basically what Bunny left on Brian, basically, when she pulled him onto the desk and made out with him. And yeah. And then finally he tells Lol, and like Lol kind of goes off to be alone.
Yeah. No, and I liked this moment. I liked them. And it, first of all, it's funny that Lowell is like, can be supposedly so jealous, but then also in that moment, so naive.
Like, yes.
I'm remembering also that he accused Brian in a previous episode of flirting with Bunny, but his radar is like way off on this one.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
But I did think it was funny when Lowell's like sulking off and then, Brian's like, hey, he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go work on the plane. And then Brian's all, hey, you want to talk about it? And then Lowell's like, well, okay, yeah. And then he comes back and then Lowell starts talking about, well, I got to go fix the nose strut. And then Brian's like, no, I meant talk about, you know, Bunny.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That was, I thought that like this episode is like really well written. Like the jokes, I think the jokes are really funny in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're, you know, well constructed as well. Yeah. It's not just.
And the acting is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause Lowell kind of comes back, like, you know, was it hangtail or what's the phrase? Like
hangdogged.
Yeah. Like, listen, Lowell, you want to talk about it? Okay. And you like, it looks like he's going to talk about Bunny.
Yeah.
Gotta fix a nose strut. Think the housing needs to be rewired. Yeah. And so we jump to the next scene. Uh-huh. And we have Antonio again blindly trying food that he doesn't know what it is.
Yeah, I know. And he's like, looks like a little child. He's like, oh, can I love fried foods. Can I try that?
Yes. I have a weakness for the fried foods. This is not bad, huh? What do you call it? Fried clams. And yeah, his look is so funny. Oh no. Where are you going? I only have about 20 minutes to get to the hospital and I have to stop at Volgograd.
The poor guy, no one offers to help take him to the hospital in either scenario.
Legit. Oh my god, I would be so quickly like trying to get him there, because my biggest fear is like one of my friends having an allergic reaction to that stuff.
Yeah. But he's the taxi driver with no one to drive him.
Yes, and he's got to get gas. So Faye comes in. She says that she found like a note from Lowell saying, leave my shift early, can't get Bunny up my mind, I'm thinking about ending it all, so long, Lowell. And then Joe comes off the plane. Wait, does he come off the plane?
Yeah, I believe so. He's coming in from outside. Yeah.
Is Joe flying?
Oh, good point. He may be back in the friendly skies now.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, he might have been flown in, because he says something like, because when I flew in,
He saw Lowell on the steeple.
Yeah, because when I flew in, I could have sworn I saw him perched on the steeple at the Unitarian Church. Hey, well, cool, I guess.
Confirmation, Joe's back in the air now.
I wish they would have like addressed that in a way, honestly, because like, that was such a big plot element in season two. And here we have him just like back flying again.
I guess sometime in that 10 months later.
Yeah.
Time jump.
Maybe having Helen out of his life allowed his heart to heal or whatever it was.
You're right. Yeah. Blood pressure went down.
So then they rush off, right?
Mm-hmm. And I really like the shot establishing Lowell up on the steeple, because they had, I don't think it was Lowell, I think it was an extra, like sitting on the steeple, and then they zoom in. It's just such a good shot. Like,
God damn it, Jared. I wrote 16. Establishing shot. Is that a, is this a stuntman in a church somewhere? Not a bad job. Good cut to the set.
Yeah.
It really did. They really did a great job.
Like, yeah, the set, they got a stuntman up there, and then the set looked like the steeple. I thought it was, you know, superior television craftsmanship.
Because they have like black walls in the background, so it looks like just a nice guy in the back. And yeah, holy shit. I love that we both noticed that, because it was done really well. We are at the steeple. Yeah, Joe climbs up and Brian is like down below. Mr. Scared of Heights, is that what Joe calls him?
Yes.
Do you want to do this, Mr. I'm Afraid of Heights?
We kind of have a clever joke here. Lowell wasn't thinking of suicide. He was, when he said thinking of ending it, he meant his marriage.
I also like the joke when Joe steps out onto like the roof of the steeple. He goes, "Whoa, this is steep." And Law goes, "That's why they call it a steeple, Joe."
Yeah.
But I love the reveal where he's like, "Yeah, you're, as you said, he was thinking about ending his life. He's thinking about ending the marriage to Bunny." Uh-huh. And he says
like, "Oh, if I jumped from this height, I'd probably kill myself," or something.
Yeah. Joe goes, "Oh, so you're not going to jump?" And he goes, "Joe, please. If I jump from up here, I'd kill myself."
And they have an interesting back and forth. Lowell's talking about how he's just been clearing his mind, thinking, and he basically doesn't want, you know, not sure if he wants to leave Bunny or not. But what's interesting is like, he's kind of arrived at the point where it sounds like he's like open to have like an open relationship, kind of like recognize. And I kind of was like, this is kind of interesting, kind of cool. But like, Joe immediately changes his mind on that.
Yeah. But I also love, I mean, we should probably just insert the audio from this line because Thomas Hayden Church's delivery is so great.
"Ever tell you about the first time I met Bunny? She was standing right down there at the end of that pier. Sun on her face, wind in her hair. She was gutting a sea bass."
God, was she beautiful. Just his delivery is so good.
Bassomatic 9000.
It makes it clear like what a star Thomas Hayden Church was.
Yeah.
He is. I mean, he's great.
VIP, right?
Yeah. He's gotta be. Yeah, you're right. VIP. Yeah,
he's the VIP for me this episode.
Although Roy. Oh my gosh. But yeah.
Close runner up.
I think I'm gonna get to Lowell, but Roy is so great in this one.
And I'm kind of like, I'd like to see a universe where Lowell did try to have kind of like an open somewhat relationship with his wife, because I could see that working for the two of them.
Well, do you think that she'd respect him in it? Because I think that's like a big part of having an open relationship, is like if she can maintain her respect for him.
Yeah.
Or if she, or also if she is okay with him screwing around.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like,
yeah. I don't know. It seems to me like Lowell, I think, could work it out, because what we've been seeing him describe as like an insane jealousy over the last couple seasons, it turns out like it was all very well founded. And if anything, he was being like very understanding and kind of chill about it based on like the extremity of how his wife was acting.
Do you know the phrase, get well soon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I got a postcard from my well salesman. It's get well soon. Yeah.
How'd that go?
Yeah, bought it well. It was a good deal. Yeah.
Nice.
And then I remember like one time I had three wells in my backyard, and I was like, well, what do we got here? And it was three wells. Yeah.
But then, okay, so Joe, he asks Lowell if he can conclusively prove that Bunny's been unfaithful.
Right. Like Joe is trying to like convince Lowell to embrace his anger about the situation.
Yeah. And then he ends up pointing out that Bunny's in a car kind of making time with a gentleman.
Right. Because like basically Like Lowell, yeah, as you were saying, like Lowell is like, well, maybe we can like make it work if I just basically like I'll allow her to see other men and whatever, we can just be make that the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe says, all right, Lowell, if I could give you absolute proof, if you could see Bunny for what she is with your own two eyes, would that finally give you permission to be angry? And Lowell goes, absolute proof? Absolute proof?
Mm-hmm.
And Joe goes, incontrovertible. And then Lowell goes, huh? And Joe goes, absolute. And Lowell like thinks about it, goes, yeah, I guess it would. And Joe goes, all right, Lowell, hate to do this, but here, look. Do you see that couple down there? Intraconvertible?
And so,
yeah, like Lowell recognizes Bunny and Fred Hanley. Fred Haney? Hanny?
Fred
Haney?
Yeah, Fred Haney. That sounds right.
Yeah. Boy, that Fred's a hell of a bowler.
Uh-huh.
And so finally, he like Lowell feels permission to give Bunny a piece of his mind. And so we hear him like yelling and spouting. And yeah.
And every time he cusses, the bell rings, the bell yes. tolls. And I love the touch at the end when they put up the credit card and that shakes from the bell toll.
Yes. That was listed on IMDb under crazy credits.
Yeah. That was super, super cool. Super good editing. That was kind of cool.
100%. This was a great episode.
Yeah. I really like this one.
One stripe.
Yeah. So shall we rape this striped bass?
One stripe.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say four stripes. So there you go.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go four stripes as well. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. You know, we've cited it's... Where it lacked, which is, you know, could have used a couple extra beats on the clam chowder escapades, but I mean, other than that, like,
you know what? Oh, you know, they were pointing that. I'm gonna go 3.5 stripes.
Okay,
because I think that's fair. It like left the clam chowder thing floating, and it left it could have used a third beat for Tony Shalhoub's,
yeah,
for Antonio's, but like, I mean, truly. That didn't bother me as much as them just like not returning to the clam chowder plot yeah. line. Because I mean, like I really wanted to find out like if like Helen and Faye, how they fared in it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that did actually really, really bother me.
And for all we know, Antonio died en route to the hospital.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, ha ha ha, let's laugh at his terrible allergy, and then he just dies.
Joe, it is true. I ate the clam chowder and I died. But it's an American way. I will sue.
I will come back to haunt you.
My dead body will sue. I will not wear a shirt.
Any final thoughts?
I have one thought. We missed the Brian's tie report.
Oh, you know, but also, I don't know if it's because like we're back on Paramount Plus or if it's just because season 3 has better production, mm-hmm. but I feel like we're seeing his ties in clear resolution.
I totally right? agree. Yeah.
Yeah. They look great.
Yeah. And these are old staples. He had the horse tie and that mm-hmm. Brownish kind of spermy music note tie.
The music note tie. Yes. Yeah.
And they were both looking nice. These ties crisp
they
as
look
you put
great.
It.
Great. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I fucking forgot about. Oh my God. Jared.
Yeah.
So like Faye comes out and she's got this note. Well, as we mentioned, this is like maybe like scene 5. Leaving my shift early. This is like Lowell's note. Leaving my shift early. Can't get Bunny off my mind. I'm thinking about ending it all. So long, Lowell. And they go, oh my God. My God. Oh, you don't think Lowell will do something stupid, do you? And then Roy, sitting at the counter in the background, he goes, gee, what are the odds? Oh, that was like one of the funniest lines for me.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Because he's just like kind of like low-key in the background, like eating a sandwich at the counter. And he just like delivers that line.
Amidst like a potential suicide crisis.
Oh, that would... I mean, so I'm giving my VIP to Lowell still. But yeah. Like, I'm telling you that it's like... he barely edged at Roy.
Yeah,
Roy is so solid in this episode.
Absolutely.
I know, like, there's like some banter during like when like Joe and Lola are on the steeple. There's like Brian talking about putting a big X on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of good jokes.
Yeah, I think it's a strong episode. We're moving in a good direction, I feel, and super excited to see Lowell, a Lowell-centric episode where he gets his own A story for once.
Yes, agreed.
And I, you know, all I can say is, you know, I hope they've planted a seed, and I hope we get to see Brian and Joe naked and wrapped in each other's arms soon.
Yeah, I hope that Bunny only appears from now on in like the pornographic end credit sequences.
Yes, yeah. Cool. Well, I think that does it. We have talked about this entire episode of Wings from season 3. Next time we shall return to talk about episode 5 from season 3 entitled If Elected, I Will Not Live.
Ooh, okay.
And as always, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach us at wingsnutsprogram@gmail.com. Be sure to rate us on your podcast application of choice. Until next time, thank you, Emerson, for taking the time to sit down and talk wings with me.
Thank you, Jared. And here are some inserts, actually. I just realized that I fucking love some bunny lines. When she's like flirting, when she's hitting on Brian, she's like, I'm tired of hearing about Lowell. I'm tired of being married. I'm tired of being stuck out on that leaky old boat. What good are these gifts that God and Dr. Parks have given me? Yes. That was such a fun line. This episode is fucking chock full of jokes, dude.
Yeah.
They really like fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
This is like Simpsons level jokes.
Yeah, I agree.
Really, really well done. All right, dude.
And Ken Levine wrote on the Simpsons, so.
Oh, yeah. You know what? 100%. You are fucking right.
Yeah. Totally makes sense.